is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. The St. Louis Blues are one win away from capturing their first Stanley Cup championship, a 2-1 victory in Game 5 last night in Boston to take a 3-2 series lead. Now, we can recap the game, but everybody listening to the sound of my voice right now, watch the game. So let's just get to what everybody's thinking about. Let's get to what everybody is talking about today. And that, of course, is the non-call. If you watch the game, certainly we know what we're talking about. Third period, the St. Louis Blues are up 2-1, up 1-0, and the series is tied at 2 games apiece. Wonderful game. A game that saw so many opportunities for the Boston Bruins in the first period, where they just had a commanding shot lead, ended up outshooting the Blues 39-21. We'll get to that in a second. But midway through the third period, Perron scores the goal to make it 2-0. But in this league, nothing is simple. And of course, you go back to the controversial non-call in this game. Achari gets taken down. Clearly gets taken down on the play. Should have been a penalty on Bozak. Now, there's a bunch of different directions that we can go into, but let's start from the beginning. Everybody sees Achari go down. Fans react. Announcers react. Fans watching on television react to him being taken down. And you assume there's going to be a call because Bozak throws his hands in the air just like any guilty player would. He committed the penalty. There's no question he took Achari down. Should have been a 2-minute penalty. Okay? Obviously, with Achari down, not being able to get up, and because the Blues possess the puck, the official does not blow the whistle. That's the right call there. So, effectively, on the passing plays that lead to the Perron goal, Bozak to O'Reilly, O'Reilly to Perron, Perron scores the goal, and it's 2-0. And now it all starts, because they're technically shorthanded. Achari can't defend Bozak. The play is completed to O'Reilly, who finds Perron, goal scored. Obviously, 2+2=4. The takedown leads to the goal instead of 1-0 with half a period to play. Now the Bruins have to score twice. Bruins, of course, score the DeBrusk goal 3 minutes later to make it 2-1. The fallacy of the predetermined outcome, that should have been the tying score, and we could still be playing out to determine who wins game 5. All right, let's unpack this. It's a bad call. But you have to put yourself in the perspective of Kelly Sutherland, all right? Television, at least NBC, showed. I did watch a little bit of the CBC feed on Twitter to get their reaction. Craig Simpson, of course, egregious non-call. Everybody agrees with that. But on NBC, they show Sutherland looking at the play. He's got a clear view of the play. And they show the animation of where his sight lines are uninterrupted between himself and the play. But what you don't see, and what no one can see but Kelly Sutherland, unless you've got seats right behind the goal and behind Sutherland, is the angle in which the official sees the call and the distance in which he sees and the depth perception that he sees it from. He sees Achari getting taken down, but because of the mesh of players, where he was situated, near the goal line, the play is at the circle, is it possible that he just saw an inadvertent collision and didn't blow the whistle? Now, he's wrong, but he's wrong from the television angles that we see. He's wrong from slow motion, but in real time, when you know that these officials are encouraged to not blow the whistle when they can, it's so much easier for an official to swallow his whistle on a questionable play than to blow the whistle and call a penalty on a questionable play. Because if it had turned out that Achari fell down on his own or accentuated the fall down, took a dive, and he blows the whistle, then we're talking about how an egregious call it was. The non-call, as frustrating as it is, you clearly see, and Bruce Cassidy brought this up after the game, that since the Blues' complaints after game 3, that clearly they are calling less penalties. And I would not be surprised if that's been the edict from the league. But I do think in all sports, an official does not want to, in the third period, make a call that can affect the game. I think it's easier for him to make the non-call on and err onto the side of let them play, which most fans all want in the first place. So after every replay, none of which can actually show the angle that Sutherland had, it looks egregious. Now, Anson Carter, who, by the way, played for the Boston Bruins in his career, in the postgame show on NBC Sportsnet, I flipped over to that to get the reaction. Of course, Mike Milbury's going crazy, saying that it was such an awful call and they blew it, and clearly they did, and certainly Jonesy agreed. But Anson Carter, he was honest and said, you know, when I saw it live, I thought it was a good non-call. Looking at the replays, clearly, it was an egregious non-call. The egregious part of it all comes from the fact that you see it in slow motion under several angles, something that the official does not get the benefit to see. Now, we can go back and say after every goal, we should go back and see if there are any penalties. We can unpack all of that during the offseason. But bad call, I'm just trying to give you the angle of Sutherland, that maybe his angle looking at it, it could have been an inadvertent trip. It could have been a collision. It could have been him just losing his balance. And that's why he did not blow the whistle. Not that he's in the bag for the officials, for the league. Not because they want the St. Louis Blues to win. Not because they're trying to force a game set. Whatever. All right. That's all silliness. Okay. There have been a lot of bad calls and clearly the league has to address it in some way, shape or form. But I do think in a lot of these penalties that we flip out about, we are going apoplectic after we get to see the review, something the official who makes the call or doesn't make the call doesn't get the benefit of the doubt of. All right? I thought the Bruins handled it well. I think they really killed two birds with one stone by the way they reacted, where they clearly expressed their regret on the non-call and how bad it was. So they sent the message that, listen, I think if you breathe on anybody wrong and you're in a Blues uniform in game six, you're probably going to get called. But they weren't over the top about it. And then they spun it back to, hey, you know, we got to do a better job, which is where I'm going to go right now. And it's easy to say that it should have stayed 1-0, that DeBrusk would have tied the game, and that maybe the Bruins would have won the game. But you don't know the fallacy of the predetermined outcome. 2-0 is completely different than 1-0. We don't know if DeBrusk would have scored. We don't know if the Blues wouldn't have scored after DeBrusk scored once it was tied at 1 as opposed to them protecting a lead. And even if it went into overtime, there's no guarantee the Bruins would have won the game anyway. How about the fact that there were 17 shots on goal in the first period for the Bruins? They outshot the Blues 17-8. Boston's got to at least come out of that first period with a lead. And then they give up the goal early in the second period. So it's 1-0 St. Louis, but the Bruins were clearly the better team. They just could not beat Binnington, and he deserved to be one of the stars of the game because he was absolutely terrific in the game, making 38 saves. We could also go back to the goal that was scored by Perron, probably one Rask would want to have back. And we could also talk about the fact that there's still a series left. Okay, we go back to game three of the conference final when clearly the St. Louis Blues were jobbed in overtime on the hand pass that wasn't called. What did the Blues do? They still went out and won the series because they still had time to win the series, and the Bruins still have the ability to do that. They've been good on the road in these playoffs, win the game on Sunday, tie the series up at 3, then you get home ice advantage in game 7. So as much as we feel bad for the Bruins, and it stinks that we're all hockey fans, we've got to go through this, because it doesn't happen in other leagues, does it? You know, what happened in the championship game between the Saints and the Rams, awful call, you're killing the officiating. League's got to do something about it, but it's not like the league is a joke. Or if they travel in the NBA or there's bad, you know, Angel Hernandez is behind home plate and his strike zone is awful. Well, then Angel Hernandez is awful. We got to get him out of there, but it's not baseball's a joke. But when it happens in hockey, it's all hockey's a joke. Well, I will say this, and we could debate this if you want. I think it's the toughest sport to officiate of the four major ones. Because even though there's a lot going on in football, they've got way more officials. You know, the NBA, the same thing. There's not the physicality you have to worry about. You got to call the fouls, but I think it's a little bit more in front of you. The space is a lot smaller than it is on the ice. Baseball, they've got, what, 7 umpires, especially for the postseason. You know, so they have it all kind of scaled down there. But in the NHL, you've got two referees. You've got two linesmen that cannot make a call. They could be asked for help. Just like a first or third base umpire could be asked for help on a check swing in baseball. But in hockey, you've got two sets of eyes that can call the penalties. with guys flying around faster than they've ever flown around in the history of this sport. Turn on any game from the 70s and 80s and it looks like it's in slow motion compared to what's happening here. And the differentiation in size, we should get to that too, because Barbashev is going to get a hearing for his head to the hit of Johansson in the game last night. But we lived in a league back in the 70s and 80s where a guy 5'8 didn't survive in this league. Now you got 5'8 defensemen. So even though there's not the physicality and we're trying to get rid of the headshots, it's tough for a guy 6'2 to hit a guy that's 5'8 and avoid his head at times. Plus, these players sometimes bend over to play for the puck. They turn around at the boards. So even though there's not as much hitting, it's probably harder to be able to call penalties and differentiate between legal and illegal with the hits more so now than it was back in the day, because it seemed like everybody was the same size back in the day, or at least the same height. Now you can get a guy like Johnny Gaudreau that can excel in this sport being diminutive in size. Heck, it looks like the first overall pick in the NHL draft is going to be Jack Hughes. He's under 6 feet tall. But he could survive in the league because of his speed. But when he gets hit by Zdeno Chara, who's 7 foot on skates, there's a very good possibility that the hit is going to be above the shoulder, even if he doesn't intend it to be. So we'll see if the Bruins can come back, fight back. They're still alive. They still have a pulse. I still think they can win this series. Because the Blues better be careful, because game 6, it's going to be a party in St. Louis. I've seen it firsthand myself. When a team comes home with a chance to clinch, all the family comes into town, people are asking for tickets, the media, if you thought it was big there for games 3 and 4, you can imagine what it's going to be like for game 6. It's going to be a party atmosphere. They're going to be talking about scheduling a parade in downtown St. Louis if they win the game. All that can be a distraction for a team that has never been in this situation before. The Boston Bruins, they've been there and they've done that before. They're a veteran-laden team. They could take advantage of that. So if you think this series is over, I think you're sorely mistaken. I think the Bruins can use what happened to them last night to their advantage in Game 6. I do think the officials will have their radar up for anything that's happening. Barbashev may get suspended, which obviously can disrupt things for the St. Louis Blues. And I think this still can be a 7-game series that the Bruins can win. All right, the other topic of conversation is Zdeno Chara. If you're not a Zdeno Chara fan now, then you're never going to be. And I understand he's a Bruin, and I understand that sometimes he's very unlikable in his career because he's been around for so long, and the longer you're in the league, the more enemies you make. But he's playing with a broken jaw. And the fact that he played last night is both believable and unbelievable. It's unbelievable in the sports world that a guy can play with a broken jaw that was suffered just 48 hours before. Okay. And actually played pretty effectively. And he played almost 17 minutes in the game. The Bruins played with 7 defensemen because they wanted to have that insurance. So Kemper got a chance to play for the first time in a while. And Backes was the scratch. So they gave him a little protection there, but it's also kind of believable because if you know hockey players, you know, you almost have to kill them. They're like zombies. You got to shoot them in the head in order for them not be able to play. So it's surprising and unsurprising. But what I also found interesting too, because we've been talking about this on the Michael Kay Show, Clint Frazier, in case you haven't been listening to the Michael Kay Show or don't care about baseball, is a outfielder for the New York Yankees who's really struggled defensively, and he's had a poor relationship with the media. Made a bunch of errors on Sunday against the Red Sox and refused to talk to the media. He has a grudge against the media, staring them down, just being a D-nozzle, for lack of a better word. And I was taken, I don't know if you guys thought this, if you were following the Yankees or following Clint Frazier. Zdeno Chara cannot speak because of the broken jaw. So when he meets with the media, they ask him questions and he writes the answers down. I mean, the guy's got a perfect excuse not to talk to the media. Sorry, Zdeno's not available. He literally cannot speak because he's got a broken jaw. No, he still meets with the media. So Clint Frazier, how does that make you feel? You're upset because you think you've been wronged by the media. You're a kid, and for the most part, people love you because you've actually performed offensively very well. I don't want to talk to the media. I don't think I have to talk to the media. Meanwhile, Zdeno Chara, who's 42 years old, he's going to waltz into the Hall of Fame, already a Stanley Cup champion. He's got a broken jaw and can't speak and still deals with the media. So another D-nozzle for sure in Clint Frazier, and I thought it was kind of rubbed in his face by Zdeno Chara, if anybody happens to care about that. So we've got Barbashev possibly getting suspended, which can disrupt things. I wonder if the seven defensemen had anything to do with the Bruins' lack of finish last night. Now, they got plenty of opportunities, so I don't think they have a kick coming necessarily. But covering the Rangers quite a few times played with seven defensemen. And when you play with seven defensemen, that means you play light one forward. And for a team that's got to roll four lines, that means someone has got to play more minutes. That means lines are being disrupted because you're playing with 11 forwards instead of 12. I wonder if that is a chemistry issue. I found it to be with the Rangers this year. I don't know if you guys, having followed the teams that you followed during the course of the year, sense the same thing. I think it's the right thing the Bruins did because you wanted to have some insurance in case Chara got hit again or Chara couldn't go. You don't want to go with five defensemen again. That's the reason why I think the Blues won the previous two games in the series, because of the lack of depth that the Bruins had with the injuries that they had on the blue line. So they did what they had to do. I just wonder how much of a disruption it ended up being. So great game five, which really was hurt by the no call by Kelly Sutherland, because I think what got lost in all the analysis afterward was just how phenomenal a game that was and how much credit you really need to give the St. Louis Blues. They crushed the Bruins on faceoffs 59-41, which I think was a big play in this game. They were actually out hit, which is rare for the St. Louis Blues, but they recovered. They got the goals they needed to, and Jordan Binnington is becoming a flat-out star in this league. I really thought it was going to be more a Tarasenko. Earlier in the playoffs, I thought Jaden Schwartz would have a chance to win the Conn Smythe. I think it's going to come down to the two goaltenders now. I think Binnington's got a chance to win it because he stole the game last night, and I thought the Blues overcame quite a bit as well. Even though they got the break in the third period on the non-call, it does take away from what was a phenomenal road game for the St. Louis Blues. And they're one win away from taking that Stanley Cup. But the Bruins, they're champions in their own right. A lot of guys on this team, they were on that team in 2011. They went game six with the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2013. So I don't think they're going quietly into that good night by any stretch. I think game six going to be phenomenal. Extra day of rest again because of travel. So we've got two possible games left in our 2018-2019 season. Sunday, game six. Cup's going to be in the building in St. Louis. And the possible Game 7 will not be until Wednesday of next week back in Boston. So chance for some guys to rest up, some of the injured players to possibly heal, and we'll keep an eye on what happens with Barbashev and whether he actually gets suspended for the Game 6 coming up on Sunday. Let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Let's start with Troy. He says, was last night's victory more of a result of Binnington playing great or the Bruins just falling short of a top effort? Well, they had 39 shots on goal. I can't say that their effort was poor by any stretch of the imagination. Again, they out-hit the Bruins. The Bruins out-hit the Blues, too. So I really think that Binnington stood on his head. It was maybe one of his best games in the postseason. Forever TH says, seems like the sympathy for Boston isn't there after the non-call last night, but are we really happy that a finals game is being talked about by officiating missed a crucial call, no matter the team? Sad to see that be the case. Well, unfortunately, what's happening, Forever TH, is this is becoming more and more prevalent, right? It's happening in all sports because we break it down so fine that there's going to be some non-call that's going to be talked about. Now, this one was egregious because it was in the middle of the third period of a 1-0 game that resulted in a goal that made it 2-0, and the final score was 2-1, so that's a big deal. But really, I think you can look at every game. There was a missed too many men on the ice penalty. I thought Patrick Sharp mentioned it during on the desk after the game that if there was no goal, if Rask makes the save, we're not even talking about this. So that it was just a unfortunate, perfect storm of events that went to the Blues' favor and against the Boston Bruins. But hey, I think it's happening in all sports. I cover football. I do post game shows for 16 years with the Jets, and more times than not, after the game, especially a close game, why was that holding penalty not called? Why was that pass interference called? It's going to happen all the time. It is only going to affect things if you allow it to affect things. And it's shows like this that talk about how great the game is that need to really focus on that. Although we did open with it because it was pretty egregious. But, you know, as far as being damaging to the sport and ruining the sport, I just think that at the end of the day, this series is at least going six games. And I think what's really going to be focused on is just how well these teams have really played. And we'll let the league sort out the officiating and the calls and the rule changes during the course of the offseason. Matt says, yes, the trip leading to the St. Louis second goal should have been a penalty, But remember, the first two rounds when Chara was allowed to clutch and grab and Marchand was breaking sticks behind officials' backs, the hockey gods see all. Matt, thank you for bringing all of that up, because over a long playoffs, and when you sit here and we get towards the end of the season, we look back and go, oh my God, it feels like 100 years ago, the Vegas-San Jose series with the 5-minute major, and you look back to the Bruins-Columbus series, which was just the last series the Bruins played in. It feels like it was months ago because it's such a long journey to the Stanley Cup. But you're right. I mean, everybody looks through it through the colored glasses of their favorite team's colors, right? So I'm sure there are St. Louis fans who are saying, well, you missed this, you missed that, we were due one, look what happened in the San Jose series. You're right, Columbus fans are sitting watching last night's game saying Marchand stepped on this, broke a stick, and he punched, who was it, Anderson in the back of the head, they never made a call. Everybody's gotten away with stuff. Everybody's caught breaks. But you know the ones we remember are the teams that take advantage of them. Because there are missed calls, there are bad penalties called, there's bad bounces of the puck all the time in this sport. All the time. And we don't talk about it when nothing happens, when there's no goal. But last night there was a goal scored. Perron made that a story because he scored the goal. If Rask makes the save, we're not talking about it. It's just another one of the missed calls that we would forget about 30 seconds after it had happened. Give credit to the Blues for taking advantage of it. Give credit to the Sharks for scoring 4 goals on the 5-minute major. Give the Bruins the credit for committing those penalties, getting away with it, and taking advantage of it. We wouldn't be talking about them taking advantage of the Columbus Blue Jackets had they not come back from 2-1 down in the series to win. So whether you would take advantage of the break, whether you make the breaks, whether you have the breaks come to you, the fact is you have to take advantage of them. And the one thing the Boston Bruins have going for them that no longer can help the Columbus Blue Jackets, that no longer can help the Vegas Golden Knights, is the fact that they're still alive. The Bruins still are alive. They can change it. Win a game on Sunday, go back to Boston Garden for Game 7, win that, and it'll be just talked about how great this championship team overcame the adversity. They have to take advantage of the fact that they're still alive. John Michael says, listening to you long enough to say the Bruins giving up on the play led to the goal more than the non-call. When Binnington's stick was torn away, he still played it out and made a huge save. That's also a great point, John, about when the stick was taken away, play continued and nobody gave up. If not, we would be talking about that non-call as well. So listen, I don't know how much the let up led to the goal, but I do think that Tuukka Rask certainly would have wanted to have that goal back for sure. So you're right. It's about taking advantage of the situations, and there's a lot of other things like Binnington losing his stick and not giving up the goal that definitely changed the narrative. Kurt Chaplin, longtime friend of mine, of course, if you ever watched The People's Court, you know Kurt. He's the one that interviews everybody after the trial is over. He says bad calls and bad hops happen, part of the game. You've got to overcome them. An enormous one went against the Blues in the hand pass goal. It cost them a huge game versus the Sharks, but Berube immediately turned the page and moved on. And look where they are now. Absolutely could not have said it better myself. Chris says, hi, Don. When the Flyers came back against Boston in 2010, I felt the key moments were the injury to Krejci and the return of Simone Gagné. Therefore, do you think the injuries to Greslick and Chara are tipping the series in favor of the Blues? Absolutely. I think the real storyline about the Blues is how they have worn down this defense of the Boston Bruins. Now, you could say, well, wait a minute, Greslick was hit illegally and that led to a suspension. Sundqvist got suspended for that hit. Chara was hit with a puck. That had nothing to do with the physicality. But what the Blues have done to that blue line with the healthy guys, and when they've played with 5 defensemen, with the exception of last night where the Bruins out-hit the Blues, it's been how physical St. Louis has been that I think has really worn the players who were on the ice down. So I do think that is a great example, and we'll see if the extra day off gets Grizzlick back into the lineup and makes Chara a little bit healthier so they can go back to their 6 best defensemen and get back to what they were doing best earlier in the playoffs. Tony says, Don, I'm torn. I can't stand the thought of another Boston sports title, but the series is too good not to go 7. It would be great for the sport if it goes the distance. Thoughts? P.S. The Bruins are the only Boston franchise I have any respect for. Interesting. Tony, of course, if you're a hockey fan, you want to see 7 games. We haven't seen a game 7 since 2011, so I'm going to be rooting for the Bruins to force that game seven. And as much as I'd love to see the Blues win their first Stanley Cup, a game seven doesn't come around all that often. Robert says, I think Binnington has a great chance to win the Conn Smythe. Do you know how many rookies, if any, have won before? I know Dryden actually won it before his rookie season. Patrick Waugh did it in 1986. I think I got to look back. Cam Ward might have been a rookie in 2006. I'm going to look that up now. Cam Ward was a rookie. Yep, Cam Ward actually played, he played 28 games in 05-06, and then of course 23 games to win the Stanley Cup. So Cam Ward was a rookie, so that answers that question. Victor says, no call is going to be the biggest talking point. However, I can't believe Chara played with his mouth wired shut. Do you ever remember someone playing through a broken jaw or something like that? I know it's happened, but somebody doing it kind of does not pop into my head. I'm sure it has happened. But still, and let's not forget the fact he's 42 years old, too. I mean, how many 42-year-olds are playing in the league? There's just one, and that's Matt Cullen, and he's a forward who doesn't play nearly as many minutes as a defenseman, especially Zdeno Chara. James White says, two illegal hits to the head by St. Louis with no call, one to Johansson and one to Torrey Krug. I'm getting tired of the dirty play, Don. Well, certainly Barbashev might not be able to get away with it, so we will see what happens there. And I thought the hit on Krug was not as egregious as some people might think. Sean says, is the no call defensible in any way? Maybe incidental contact or something like that. Even Bozak thought it was a penalty. It's not defensible. It's indefensible, as I said earlier in the podcast, based on the fact that you see so many angles. But live, it's a guy falling down, and then you have to wait and see what the call is. And I'll give you a perfect example, and I think he's one of the best in the business. I work with Dave Maloney when I do the Ranger broadcasts. And I can't tell you how many times there'll be a call missed. Ranger gets tripped. Oh, my God, I can't believe they didn't make that call. Awful. And then you look at the replay, and then Dave will go, you know what, I take it back. I'm looking at the replay, and he fell down on his own, or it ended up tripping over one of his teammates' sticks. So how you react in real time sometimes does not mean you're going to react the same way when you see the replay. This one clearly shows whatever your reaction was at the time was the right reaction, but the egregiousness of the call did not come until replay. I mean, that's the way I looked at it too. When I'm watching the game and I see him go down, I'm like, oh, look like they missed something there. I got to see the replay, and then I see the replay, and it's like, all right, yeah, look like, was it, did he run into him? No, he kind of stuck his knee out there, his stick was there. We really got to analyze it, and then the more and more you analyze, the more angry you get, and the more you feel like they missed the call, not anything that Kelly Sutherland can benefit from. I just wonder now, as we get to game six, and then possibly a game seven on Wednesday, whether we will see the same officiating crew at all in the next possible two games, or is just the controversy enough where, you know, we can't put Kelly back into the game. You figure he's not going to officiate game six. They never go back to the same officials the very next game. And then I think him going back to Boston would probably be a huge mistake. I actually feel bad for Kelly Sutherland the next time he has to officiate a game in Boston, because I don't think those fans are going to forget anytime soon. All right. Monday, we're going to try to get EJ. It might be tough. I think it might be easier if St. Louis wins, because he's probably going to hang around St. Louis a little bit and with the celebration and everything. So we're going to try to get EJ as we do every Monday. Of course, EJ from the NHL Network, NHL Now. I don't know what his travel schedule is going to be, because everybody's going to jump and have to hurry back to Boston for the possible Game 7, although there is the extra day off. So I don't know. The answer is I don't know if EJ's going to join us on Monday. But you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to We'll try to get a guest of some sort, even if not it's EJ. And if St. Louis wins, certainly we'll try to tap into the Blues a little bit and just get the reaction from their first ever Stanley Cup. And if nothing else, we will be previewing the Game 7 coming up on Wednesday. So we will talk to you again on Monday. Need to get in touch with me during the course of the weekend or during Game 6 on Sunday. At Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct is the best way you do that. And you've always got to put hashtag Game Misconduct so it doesn't get lost in all the tweets that we get during the course of the day. So we'll be back with you again on Monday. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.